Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. What's up, Peter?
Not much. We are in the thick of conference play and it's kind of crazy. We're almost halfway through or a little bit over halfway through the college season. But I like to think that this is the most fun time of year on the amateur calendar between all that's going on in the college baseball world and then also in the draft world, which I guess to an extent are one and the same, but fun times ahead.
We're really halfway through the college season already. That is super frustrating.
It's nuts. And I was like looking at teams' records last night. It's, you know, it's like 22-4, 25-2. You could probably tell which teams I was looking at, but I was like, are we really 26, 27, 28 games into this whole deal? But this will be the,
I guess, are you counting the playoffs, postseason stuff, or just regular season?
No, just regular season. So okay. I guess all in all,
that makes me feel a little. That makes me feel a little better, at least.
Yeah, yeah. If it's any consolation, we are not technically halfway through the entire deal. So,
yes, that is a consolation because while we do have MLB season kicking up, or I guess it's already kicked off by the time you guys are listening to this podcast. Plenty of that to look forward to. It is always just jarring how much we get into the college season before the pros really get going. But
I know I didn't even realize that until yesterday. I was like, all right, we're a really good chunk into the college season and MLB hasn't even had its opening day, but another thing to look forward to on the baseball calendar. So I can't complain.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk through our first in-season draft update on today's show. Wednesday of this week, we released the top 300, tons of moving parts and up down players throughout the list in this update. Obviously we added 100 players, updated reports for all those players. So the list is live and on the site and you guys can read through it. We also have a complimentary piece going over some of the more notable risers and fallers in that ranking. And I also got a chance to just really go in the weeds and get in depth on Liam Doyle's unique profile and try and just put into context what makes Liam Doyle such a unique and puzzling pitching prospect in this class. We've talked about him a lot on the podcast. So I don't know that we need to go at length in him or over him on today's episode, but that piece is up on the site and you can read through that as well. Because he was one of the more prominent risers on this board. It's funny because the way we do the draft board here at BA, we have an internal spreadsheet where we're kind of tracking everything. And so we have a running list. And in my mind, like Liam Doyle and Patrick Forbes and Riley Quick, I guess would be the other one. Like these guys have all been up in a spot that's more representative of their talent than our preseason list for a long time. But just the fact that it's now finally official out on the public site, It's just good to have it there, but it's just funny because in my mind, Liam Doyle has kind of been in this late teens range for a while now. But I guess he officially is there now, so that's good.
Exactly, yeah. Internally, we've had him shoved up there pretty good since start number, I don't know, 2 or 3, and whatever that Oklahoma State start was. That was, he's kind of had a rocket ship attached to him.
I guess what are your overall thoughts on, like, if you had one big picture takeaway from this update, Peter, what would it be for you? Because I mean, I'm really involved. Obviously you're really involved. Jacob's involved. Ben's involved. Like we try and get as many people on the team who want to be involved to have some input into this list. Like we're all talking to scouts, we're all watching games, we're all gathering feedback. Is there any like one significant takeaway at this stage with this update for you?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly drive the bus, without a doubt, a lot more than the rest of us on it. But I think in just looking through it, and this might not be a takeaway through the from the actual update, but I don't envy anyone. Well, actually, we can get into that next point in a little bit. But I think and this is something we've talked about, but I'm a fan of the depth in the class, whether you get outside the first round and kind of hone in on rounds 2 through 5, or, you know, even more truly in the middle rounds and rounds 4 through 7, 5 through 8. I think there are a lot of quality players, and to narrow that down even further, particularly on the pitching side, like there are a lot of arms who are kind of, you know, fringe 100 guys or even outside the 100 that I'd be really happy getting. Like Griffin Hugues is one, Miles Patton's another. I know they're belly to belly in the update, but those two guys are arms that I'm a real fan of, and to get them in that range would be, I'd be very happy to have that happen. Cody Bowker's another one. I could kind of keep going on and on. So I think the depth in general of the class in the middle rounds is like the pitching depth is what stands out to me. Like, I think that there's a lot of value to be had on the pitching side. What about you?
Yeah, pitching depth stands out. We can talk about that metal top. But in terms of like a demographic that really stood out to me on this update, the left-handed pitching capital in this year's class feels very strong to me. I just pulled up our board here. It looks like we have 16 left-handed pitchers ranked inside the top 100. And most of those guys are on up arrow trajectories pretty significantly. So I would say maybe that's more of an indication for some that we had them just ranked too low coming into the year. But I think most of them have done a really good job just improving their profiles, either through performance or an uptick in stuff or adding a third pitch. Like the guys with basically a round or more up arrow movement on this update include Liam Doyle, who we had ranked 52nd and now is ranked 16th. Briggs McKenzie, left-handed pitcher on the high school side out of North Carolina, who was ranked 106 and is now ranked 36th. Kate Anderson at LSU, who we had in the third round at 97. Now he's in at 40, which I think you could even say he could go higher than that. Zach Root, left-handed pitcher at Arkansas, 76 to 44. Joseph Jerwa at Michigan State, 110 to 50. Jared Spencer, left-handed pitcher at Texas, goes from not on our top 200 to second round. Jack Bauer, left-handed pitcher out of Illinois on the high school side, flirting with triple digits as a prep left-hander, goes from like fourth, fifth round range to top two round range. Aiden Stillman out of Florida, another high school left-handed pitcher. Robert Mitchell, left-handed pitcher on the high school side out of Texas. Those are also two guys that are in the top 100 now that previously weren't. So it's just a lot of up air movement for left-handers specifically. And I think just the pitching demographic in general is moving up early. And like part of me wonders, especially on the college level, we saw a lot of pitchers really dominate non-conference play, and then conference play started and the results started coming back down to earth a little bit more. I wonder if we're going to run into an issue where the talent disparity is so significant in college baseball that we put too much stock in early season results. Although even with the guys like Liam Doyle, whose non-conference results are better than his conference so far, like he has added 3 ticks of velocity basically on his fastball. So a lot of moving parts there, but I think the pitching is really deep in this year's class.
Yeah, I agree. The pitching depth, and especially hearing you run through it and lay it all out, it definitely stands out. But another point I was going to make, and this kind of ties in more with our first staff draft that we did, which will be out on baseballamerica.com on Monday. I love those exercises. I think they're a lot of fun. We can probably talk about it more on next week's podcast, not to spoil anything, but I really do enjoy those. But one of my takeaways from it, and it'll probably give away the range in which I picked, I don't envy really anyone picking inside the top five to six or seven. Like, and just sitting there where I picked, which was second overall, I won't go into who I picked, but There was really nobody that I was like, all right, this is my guy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kind of set it and forget it. I feel really confident in this pick.
You kind of have to squirm around a little bit and really like argue with yourself about who's the best player in a group of like maybe 10 players that are in consideration.
Yeah. I mean, there were five or six guys that I was thinking about, obviously.
I mean, we can talk through the first two picks. I don't think it's too much to spoil. So I picked first and took Seth Hernandez. You picked second and you took
Jamie Arnold.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess I think it'll lead to a good conversation about how we're viewing the top of the class, if just to be upfront about who you actually took and maybe some of the guys you're considering. But yeah, we do have a new number one on this list. It is Jamie Arnold, the guy you got in the staff drafts. Just a little preview, sneak peek for next week's staff draft. But yeah, like when I was gathering feedback on this list, I was really reaching around and asking like, hey, do you guys think there is a like no doubt number one player in the class at this point? And largely the feedback I got is no, not really. And then Jamie Arnold was just the player who had done the most to earn or warrant that spot for now. But I have also heard from a number of people who are picking at the top or heard from scouts who have talked to teams that are in that range who are like, yeah, doesn't feel like a great year to be picking in the top five.
Yeah, no, it's certainly interesting. And I like, you know, you've got this shortstop group. I think with it being so open at the top, I think it does make it a little bit more fun to follow because there's room for, I'd say, a few guys to potentially push themselves into that range and to be legitimately considered for it. I think Iva Arquette at Oregon State is one. I was beating his drum a little bit coming out of the summer and seeing him a bunch on the Cape. And I think that anyone that saw him up there would feel reasonably similar. And then, you know, so much has been said at this point about Merrick Houston that it would be kind of like beating a dead horse with the transformation that he went through. And then obviously, like, you know, Dean Curley's a third baseman, but they hit power combos. You know, it's going to be too difficult to pass up on. But outside of that, like even in the teens, like Luke Stevenson is an excellent, like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the class totally in general, but I don't know. There are like a number of guys that I feel, you know, really good about going forward.
Mm. The other demographic that stood out to me is just the shortstop capital that we have this year. I mean, we have five of our top 10 are shortstops. If you count both Ethan Holliday and Billy Carlson, and I would definitely count Billy Carlson. We have shortstop right-handed pitcher on him. But we've got five in the top 10, so half of that group. We've got a third of basically the first round, the top 30. The top 30's worth of players are shortstops. And it's both high school and college shortstops who are exciting. Obviously, that trio of college shortstops, Arquette at Oregon State, Merrick Houston at Wake Forest, Dean Curley at Tennessee, all jumping inside the top 10. But then you have high school shortstops who are like pushing into the first round or not too far behind it. Steele Hall, a Alabama high school shortstop, is probably the most prominent in this update. But then you have Josh Hammond, who entering the year I would have viewed as a right-handed pitcher, no doubt moving forward, but he really wants to hit and has looked good and is pushing into that comp range and maybe even higher for some. Heard good reports on Lucas Franco, a shortstop out of Texas on the high school side. Both Joseph Parker in Mississippi and Daniel Pierce in Georgia are two other Southeastern high school shortstops who seem to be getting really heavy scout crowds. So I guess once you get outside of the first round and once you get past Vahiva Aloy at Arkansas, it's a lot of high school shortstop capital. And once you get into that range, I'm sure there's going to be some risks of players getting to campus. Coy James maybe is a name in North Carolina who I think on talent could easily fit in the top two rounds based on his pure hitting ability. But it sounds like he might be a hard buy out of Ole Miss. But I mean, this is the demographic where you want to have a lot of prospect capital. And I think this class has it. So that has me pretty encouraged and excited about the group as well.
Yeah, I mean, up the middle depth is huge, whether you're looking at the makeup of the depth on your team and organization, and then also when picking in the draft. So that's another really exciting group of names you laid out. I really like Daniel Pierce. He's sitting at 59 right now. Wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, he's already got like a consistent up arrow next to his name. It wouldn't shock me at all if he ends up reasonably higher come the release of the 400 and then even the 500. He's always gotten rave reviews for the glove. He's really smooth in the field with the actions, on the dirt at shortstop. But it sounds like he put on some good weight. The bats come along, and there are a lot more tools to be excited about. Coming into the spring,
I was really pumped to hear a lot of positive feedback about Daniel Pierce, because I don't know if we had mentioned on this podcast or if I had like claimed personal cheese ball status with him, but he would have been one of the players that I just really personally liked quite a bit coming out of East Coast Pro. I think he was the second most impressive look I had at East Coast Pro behind Landon Harmon. And it was mostly for his glove work. It was for the defense, really silky smooth, good actions, good runner who's at least plus and has turned in 70 grade times, above average arm for me at shortstop, like kind of a no doubt defensive profile at shortstop, and maybe the one of the better defensive shortstops in the class behind like the elites of the world, the Billy Carlsons and the Merrick Houstons of the world. But I had gotten some scouts who were like, yeah, all that's really good, but ultimately, what is he as a hitter? How much is he going to hit? How much power is he going to have? And he does look noticeably more physical early this spring. And we've gotten some feedback on him potentially having like five solo tools across the board, and just having the scouting community provide a lot more confidence in the bat for him makes the profile fairly complete if you do view his hitting ability and his power as solidish tools moving forward. So yeah, he just is a really well-rounded player.
Yeah, I like him a lot. And then I guess not to put you on the spot here, because we discussed kind of a general plan for the podcast, but I didn't bring this up. Outside of the top, let's say 50 for now, and you can expand it as far down the list as you want. Is there any kind of personal cheese ball or sleeper in your mind that you think could eventually ascend into the first round? We may have hit on him already with Daniel Pierce, but is there anyone that you've kind of hitched your wagon to that you're pleased with early on?
Well, another one that I'm really excited about, and that kind of is in the same conversation as Daniel Pierce, but Joseph Parker out of Mississippi, JoJo Parker, he goes by at times. His twin brother is also a prospect in this draft class, and is a legitimate prospect in his own right. But I mentioned him as one of the more exciting up arrow names to know in this update. I really loved his swing last summer when I got to see him. I thought it was impressive feel for the barrel and paired with a lot of physicality and strength. Could easily see him being like this solid hitting power, left-handed hitting shortstop. And I guess that last point, shortstop, was kind of a question mark for me. He is a lot bigger. He wasn't the best runner, but he's turned in some like shockingly good run times in workouts early this spring. He's been another player who just has a ton of scouts watching him. He has the sort of offensive tools and performance in this class that wouldn't shock me if someone was just like really high on the hitting ability, like maybe similar to like a Gunnar Henderson type coming out of high school. He was a guy who went at the back of the first round or right in that comp range. And obviously if you redrafted that, he's going the very top of the first round. So if someone is really convinced in his offensive tools, which I would probably already take him inside the top 40 personally. He could be a guy maybe that just keeps climbing and goes in a good spot, because I think once you get into the middle of the first round, there's really not a lot of separation between those players for me and like the next 20, 30 on the board. And if you think he's one of the better hitters available, which he very well could be, I think he has a chance to go in a really good spot. The other one is Jack Bauer, who we mentioned kind of in passing in our left-handed pitcher conversation, but it's very rare to have a left-handed pitcher touching triple digits. Alex Clemmy got pretty close a few years ago. I think Maddox Bruns would be another pitcher who got close to that velocity. I don't think Thomas White touched triple digits, but he was like pushing 98. You could easily see him getting to that in the future with his just the frame and the ease of his operation. But I think Bauer is much more in the Clemmy Maddox Bruns sort of mold, a really high octane pitcher with some control command reliever questions. But I could easily see him going in a good spot. Although I guess in general, the high school pitchers tend to go a little bit later and get overpaid. But that's really exciting arm talent. How about you? Are there any guys post 50 that you're really excited about?
Yeah, I mean, I like both of them. I like JoJo Parker's bat a lot. And then obviously with Bauer, I mean, you talk about like the phrase moldable ball of clay has become, I don't want to say overused, but it's a popular one. But I mean, you got left-handed premium velocity, can really spin his breaking ball, even though he kind of, I'd say it's not a super polished breaking ball yet, but like there's field of spin, velo, projectable kid. Like that's, you know, there are a ton of fun traits there. So it's hard to not be somewhat enamored with that. But I'll go a little further out. And this isn't a guy that's going to end up in the first round at the end of the day when all said and done. I don't want to never say never. I'd be floored
never know.
If he was. But Griffin Hugues at Miami is someone that I've, you know, I liked him last summer on the Cape a good bit. He's excelled in the rotation for Miami. I know we talked about him a few weeks ago in early March after the first few starts of the season, but I like him a lot. Like it's a legit four pitch mix. It's a simple delivery. It's a really appealing blend of strikes and stuff. I have zero doubt that he'll be able to start professionally. Like you could give the fastball 55, slider 55-6, changeup is a 50 flat. Like it's four at least average and two at least above average pitches combined with at least above average to plus strike throwing. Like there's, that's a lot to like. The fastball is in the low 90s up to 95 with plenty of life through the zone. His ability to locate it helps optimize its shape. Slider, he's got a feel to manipulate its shape as well. And there's a degree of depth and sharpness to his curveball that's appealing. So I think in terms of, you know, his ceiling might not be as high as a number of other arms ahead of him. And, you know, he could relatively be more or less a finished product, give or take an uptick just across the board. But I really like what I see now. It's just a really appealing package.
Another name I wanted to highlight just because I was scanning down the list and seeing where Hugues was and seeing some guys kind of in this range, but Ryan Wideman at Western Kentucky was a significant up arrow player. He wasn't on the list to start. Now we've got him pretty solidly in the top five round range. He's been one of the more impressive performers in the entire country. If you look at like pitcher digs or the bags statistic they use to try to give you like an all around offensive and pitching profile, he's been the eighth best hitter in the country for Division I college players. And I know you wrote about him recently on a piece looking at kind of, I don't know how you tabbed it, if it was a smaller school or mid-major or what, but he's at Western Kentucky. He's got like an elite frame, 6'5", 215 pounds, real tools. And as of this recording, through 24 games, he's hitting 465, 513, 832, six homers, four triples, 11 doubles, 19 stolen bases. He's playing center field. So he's got a pro frame. He has power, he has speed, he has performance. It's just a question of like, how much do you buy into his pure hitting ability and approach? He is a hyper aggressive hitter at the plate. If you couldn't tell by just the gap in his average and OBP there in that triple slash, he swings a ton, maybe to the point where it's concerning. But again, like if I'm in the batter's box, I'm swinging a lot and I'm having his results, I'm not planning on taking any pitches anytime soon. So just the combination of his early season performance and physical tool set, I could easily see this like fifth round range being too light on him. I mean, he spent 2 years at a junior college before transferring to Western Kentucky, so it's not like a super extensive track record, but there's a lot to like here with this profile.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you kind of, when evaluating guys, whether it's a position player or pitcher, it's like how many buckets, you know, can you throw it? Can you throw this guy into when it comes to plus or better tools? And I mean, he fits in a handful. Like it's an elite body, comfortably plus runner. He's got plus raw power. It's like the only thing that I think would hold teams off a little bit is the lack of polish on the hit tool. But I think that just the general loudness to his profile, you know, I think that's worth a, you know, for me, it's like fourth to sixth. I bet he ends up going in that range, and in top five rounds is certainly not out of the question. And I think that he's got a, on top of this elite body, like there's an appealing fluidity to his actions on the grass out in center field. Like, I think that he's got a really good chance to stick there. He's a great athlete. I mentioned the plus running ability. In watching him both, you know, just on stream and watching his games a little bit, and then going back on Synergy and watching him in center field, like, he can really go and get it. Like, he's got a gazelle type look to him. He can get tons of range from gap to gap, can attack the baseball. But again, it's like the hit tool and how much that's going to scare people off. He's super aggressive. Contact skills are below average or fringy, and he chases at a 47% clip. But
yeah, that last piece right there is a really scary one.
Yeah, so it's like, for me, once kind of the fifth round hits, that would be kind of like when my internal light bulb goes off, where it's like, okay, it's potentially Weidman time if I were running the show. Yeah, but it's a really appealing profile. And I think, like, not to get into a more of a discussion here, but comparing him and like James Quinn Irons,
yeah, thinking through the physicality and the raw tool set, that's the player that immediately came to mind for me. And I had some feedback from scouts who basically described it similar to what you're saying, is there, like, there was an ease of the way Weidman moved around that was a little bit different than the way Quinn Irons moved. But Quinn Irons at George Mason, he's another player entering the year, really intriguing, like, physical tool set. And it's just a matter of, like, how, all right, go out and prove it. How much are you going to hit? And earlier this year, he has hit at a pretty high level. So he finds himself in a good spot, or a top 200 spot on the board.
Yeah, deservedly so. I mean, with Quinn Irons, like, he's listed, I think, at like 6'5", 230. With him, it's more, if this makes sense, it's more physicality and strength than there is athleticism in there.
Yeah.
Like, he moves reasonably well. Like, he's not a pro center fielder, but he moves, like, sneaky well. But again, it's more like you said, like, brute strength and physicality than it is, like, this smooth athleticism. Like, he feasts on fastballs. There's really not a lot of heat or miss. Like, I think it's a 90% overall contact rate against the pitch and 97% in zone. He's been susceptible to miss against secondaries. His frame, and this is kind of a deep pull, who knows how good this comp is, but it reminded me a little bit of Andy Gariola from Old Dominion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Gariola's way, like, his raw power is a legit 70, and it's above where Quinn Irons is now, and it'll probably be above where Quinn Irons is for the rest of his career. But, like, body type wise, it's a little bit similar. Quinn Irons moves better than Gariola, but sheer body type, I think there are some similarities. So that was a deep pull, but I think,
yeah,
and it's reflected in the rankings, but I'd go Weidman above Quinn Irons. For now.
I'm glad we have it in that order then.
Exactly.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And not to blow this kid up, but, and I slacked you about him, is Matt Barr at SUNY Niagara, right-handed pitcher. Yeah. I was So I'm a crazy night owl, as I think most people
To be clear,
are.
We do not have Matt Barr at Niagara on the list right now, but this was a fun poll from Peter, so go ahead.
Correct. And I'm sure when it comes to the 400, he'll be on there somewhere. Who knows the range? But he will be on a BA ranking at some point, I would guess. But I was just kicking around at 2:30 in the morning, as I tend to do, trying to find sort of diamond in the rough type guys. I was on, as you said, how you're talking about the bags website. I was on Pitcher Digs, just sorting at the JUCO level by whatever their top category is. I think it was just digs, and I was just sorting from.
Yeah, kind of uses like peripherals, like FIP based numbers, like strikeouts, walks, home runs allowed. I think it has innings, and I'm pretty sure that's kind of basically how they sort those guys out, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I'd be lying if I said I was super.
I'll pull it up as you're talking and see if I can explain it in any more detail that's useful. But go ahead.
Awesome. Yeah, it's an interesting website to check out. But I was kicking around on there, made my way over to the JUCO level, just seeing if there was anyone on there who stood out. And Matt Barr was either at the top or second best. And I was like, who is this kid? And as I kept digging in more and more about him, it's like that Vince McMahon meme. Where he's like on the chair and then like leaning back in the chair and then like falling over on the chair. Like, I mean, I was like, who is, like, how have I not heard of this kid? So to kind of lay it out a little bit, I mean, through two starts spanning 10 innings, he's yet to allow an earned run. This is Matt Barr. Surrendered just two hits. He's got a strikeout to walk ratio of 21-0. He's 6'6", super high-waisted, projectable frame with a ton of room to fill out. He just turned 19. Fastball's been up to 98 with a ton of life through the zone. And he's also got a pair of high-spin breaking balls and a curveball and a slider. There's kind of some low-hanging fruit to clean up in his operation, but he actually moves reasonably well for his size, I think. And the upside here for me is immense, and I think that he's got a chance to see his draft stock climb tremendously as the spring goes on. What was interesting is that there's very little video out there. Only some stuff on Twitter and some a handful of bad pitches on Synergy. Like it looks like I'm spying on him from center field trying to watch his pitch. But that video was better than no video. He was another intriguing name that I'm sure will be on a ranking. But I was like, goodness gracious.
Yeah, that's a great deeper sleeper sort of name to be aware of. And it sounds like the scouting industry is kind of running in to get looks on him because the stuff is so exciting as you laid it out. But Diggs is a little bit more nuanced than I was giving it credit for initially. I pulled it up. They say it's a game score metric measuring innings, strikeouts, walks, hit by pitch, home runs, and hits designed for multi-inning pitchers, adjusted for park, league, and year. Park league and years for MLB, age level park and league for minor league, and then age, conference, and park where applicable for NCAA and JUCO. So pretty good overall metric. Just it's very useful to look at the leaderboards and see who maybe we're sleeping on, or just see players who might be interesting to dig into to see if there's like stuff and tools to back up the performance, as is the case where you found Matt Barr. So definitely a good site to check out. Would recommend if you're really into like the amateur data. There are not a lot of great, we don't have fan graphs and Baseball Savant for college players, but we've got some newly developed tools that are really, really helpful.
Yeah, a lot of fun stuff. And I guess the, not to keep putting you on the spot here, but
no, do it, please do test me out.
Where are you at on Corbin Dickerson and how high are you on him? Because when it comes to helium names, I think on the college side, he's been one of the more popular ones and for good reason. But like, how high are you on Dickerson?
Yeah, I don't know that I have like a super well-formed opinion on Dickerson. He's a player who coming out of high school was pretty prominent. And it was a case where I believe like the hitting ability was pretty advanced and it was like a solid all around tool set surrounding that hitting ability. And then he's just been tremendous in the early goings at Indiana. We definitely had to get him up on the board. He's like top 200 right now for us. He's hitting 346, 426, 720 through 24 games, 11 home runs, which is kind of crazy. And some of the exit velocities that we've seen from him are like so crazy as to like warrant some suspicion with them for me, because he's not the biggest player in the world, but I don't know. Like, it's very hard for me to get a concrete view of how I view Dickerson. Like, the swing itself is almost a little bit odd to me with how he's kind of coiled the front shoulder in at the plate. He has a lot of bat speed, obviously, but I don't know. I don't have a great feel for where I'm slotting him in personally. Although, if you want to use our board, which is what we recommend doing because it's driven by the scouts, we've got him like 6-7 round range at 167 and could easily keep climbing if the performance continues throughout conference play. Where are you at on him?
Round range wise, I'd say 3-6. So like right where we had, like range wise speaking, that's like right where we've got him. But I'm with you. Like, it's hard to be all the way in on him, and maybe I'm insane for not being all the way in on him, but there's, like you said, there's kind of a lack of a track record. He was a big time name coming out of high school, but he didn't play at Louisville. And so all you're basing it off of really, at least coming into this year, was like 50 plus games in the Northwoods. And then now you're looking at a 25 game sample this spring. And it's been a really impressive sample size for Dickerson. I mean, he popped another 115 yesterday on a double.
Yeah, some of these EVs are crazy.
Yeah, and the swing that garnered the 115, I was like, are we looking at a little bit of a misread here? But nonetheless, like, impressive tools. It's like he can go and get it in center field. He's a really good athlete, thunderous bat speed. You talk about the impact that he's been able to generate this spring. Like, I don't know if I'm all the way in on him, but I think just the tools themselves probably fit into that third to sixth round range. When all is said and done, I'd probably be more like 4-6 than I would be 3-4. But another kind of interesting, potentially up the middle profile.
Yeah, just pulling up his high school draft report, we had him 188 coming out of the high school class in 2022. He was drafted 20th round by the Twins that year, but obviously didn't sign, went to campus instead, and looks like that is paying off as a pretty good decision for him, because he's going to be going higher than the 20th round this year.
I'd say so.
All right, cool. Any other guys you want to mention or any other macro level takeaways on this draft update? As always, you guys can see the full list on the site with full reports on every player. And we also have tools grades and BA grades for the top 100.
Yeah, I mean, it's if I'm a draft Nick, which I am, I'm fortunate enough that I can just pop on the spreadsheet and see it. But man, if you were a draft Nick, there is everything that you could possibly want.
You know, one other player I want to mention before we wrap up is JB Middleton at Southern Miss. He was a guy who, as I was like writing him up, he was going to be on the list, but I just found myself liking him more and more as I was writing the report and as I was watching more film of him. I mean, he's got a fastball that's been sitting like 94, 95 miles per hour up to 97 through six starts. He has a 2.73 ERA. 27.9% strikeout rate, 8.1% walk rate. And his slider is really hard in the upper 80s. He's getting a lot of miss on that. He's actually got a even more miss in terms of a rate basis on the changeup, which is also a firm upper 80s pitch that I think he probably needs to develop a little bit more feel for. But just in terms of pure stuff, with a fastball sitting in the mid 90s and a really hard slider, and now some track record of control early in the season, I'm pretty encouraged. Last 2 years at Southern Miss, he was mostly a reliever. And he's now moving into a starting role and has been really, really effective in the early goings here.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought him up because I like him a good bit as well. The book on him coming into Southern Miss and even in his freshman fall, it was big time stuff, but he really struggled to harness it. And at times he had no clue where it was going and it was reflected. But, year over year, especially last year to this year, it's taken a step in the right direction. That's not saying he's this pinpoint control guy or even a plus control guy, but it has been encouraging to see it kind of gradually progress and see him fare well, especially in the rotation. Like you said, it's big stuff. Fastballs went up to 97, 98 with some life in the top of the zone with a little bit of ride. And then the harder slider has been an effective bat misser. And then the changeup looks the part of of an effective third pitch on which to kind of build out and mold. If you can separate it a little bit more off the fastball, but it evades bats right now. And I'm happy you brought him up because he's another arm that I'm a fan of.
I guess I've discovered that I really just like these short 6-foot right-handers with velocity and a hard breaking ball. Cause it's not in my mind, it's not a totally dissimilar profile to Brian Curley at UGA, who I really like, and who also recently made his first start of the year, went 5 innings against Florida, 5 shutout innings, I might add, with 5 punches and 2 walks. So I really want to see him push further up the board as well, because I found myself really liking the fastball slider combo there.
Yeah, Curley's a really interesting one, not to open up a whole other can of worms, but he's super, super interesting. Like, plus fastball slider combo, there's not much there right now by way of a third pitch, but super undersized kid with kind of an explosive, efforty delivery, dynamic mover.
Am I allowed to claim either of these as cheese balls at this point? I think Curley would classify for me.
Interesting. I'm not in personal cheese ball territory yet on either of them. I'm trying to see if there's anyone on here like really quick. I guess Matt Barr, but
that certainly counts.
I'm trying to think of anyone that I would hitch my wagon to, and not trying to delay.
I've got one. Did we talk? I don't know if we mentioned him on the podcast yet, but Talon Haley, left-handed pitcher out of Mississippi, high schooler. He's old for the class. I love the way he moves on the mound. I like the way he spins the ball. He's also been through a lot of adversity in his life already, going through some injuries and some illness that he's gone through. But I just love how the operation looks on the mound, and I think he can really spin the baseball. We've got him ranked right inside the top 200 right now. I'll claim him as a personal cheese ball at this point, and we'll circle back later and see what happens with him.
Yeah, you know more about him than I do, admittedly, but I mean, it's, you know, a fun kind of profile on the mound, left-handed starter traits in there.
Mm-hmm.
Field of spin, and you mentioned it kind of in digging in further on him. It's hard to not pull for someone that's, you know, gone through what he has. So
I guess we could be specific, because it's like, I think it's public, but like he battled cancer and has gotten through that battle, which is awesome. I think in high school he was dealing with that, but just an easy kid to root for.
Yeah, no doubt. But outside of that, I mean, we could probably bounce names off each other for hours and hours, but in lieu of maybe one podcast, if we can do that, but in lieu of lengthening it out too much.
Yeah, like, we can wrap. Anything you want to mention before we get out of here?
No, I mean, as I do every week, and we both do every week, no matter what area of the game you're a fan of, there's a ton of stuff over on baseballamerica.com. MLB opening day is tomorrow. There'll be tons of stuff in conjunction with that. The top 300 draft update released today, or I guess yesterday, if you're listening to this if you're listening to this on Thursday, it released on Wednesday. There are a lot of pieces that coincided with that are awesome reads that Carlos did. I just put out a little bit of a deep dive on 8 mid-major draft prospects, in which Ryan Weidman's include. I go in depth on him. And then, you know, there's tons of stuff on the prospect side as per usual. Josh is getting after it in Arizona, Jeff in Florida, really everyone's crushing it. So no matter what you're a fan of, I can guarantee you'll find a lot that'll suit your fancy.
Cool. All right. Well, that wraps it up for today. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thanks for just supporting Baseball America in general. But we will see you guys next week. Same time, same place. For Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's VANTA.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.